That's all you get. That's all you get for the cold open, guys. Sorry, it's a bit lackluster this time. I need more people to watch live, man! Welcome back, everybody, to Independent Incidentals. I'm sorry I yelled at you. I didn't actually mean to do that. That was kind of disrespectful on my end. That was a little bit hurtful. I didn't mean to do that. Also, I realized that the entire thing was muted since a while ago. So that's unfortunate. Anyway, as I was saying, welcome back to Independent Incidentals. I'm sorry for yelling at you. That was extremely unpolite of me. So, the people at home heard exactly what I said before. I just repeated myself just for you, the two people who are listening live. Welcome. Hello. How's it going, everybody? Today, I'm going to be finally fulfilling a promise that I made a while back. I remember this was kind of what I was talking about a while ago during the summer when I had all those episodes where I was talking about narrative games. Specifically, we were talking about, what were we talking about? Doesn't really matter. Point is that we're talking about meta-narrative games. No, it was Disco Elysium, I remember now. I was like, oh yeah, I need to replay Undertale because I just got it. And I'm like, ugh. So I played the game back in, God knows when, probably July, if I had to guess. I'd imagine July. It was probably July. I'm going to say July. It was in July when I finished the first run of the game. Great, fantastic game. Also, is that... Right now, it's still showing women's hockey, I think. Let me put a... And for the track title, it's going to say, get in here. There we go. That'll do the trick. Beautiful. Love that. Love that for me. Love that for you. Love that for everybody here. What are we talking about today? We're talking about meta-narrative games. This is all going to be off the cuff because I didn't do too much research. So this is just going to be my opinions, my thoughts, my ideas of what this genre has in store. I lied, actually. I did a little research, but I didn't write it down. So I'm just going to go off the top of what I said. So if you take anything I say at face value right now, then don't. Just don't, man. Honestly, it's not worth it. It's not worth your time, and it's not worth my time. But if you'll let me yap for a little bit, then I shall. The idea of a meta-narrative is the idea of a cohesive story, or at least a concept, or some sort of idea, some sort of medium that is able to talk about itself, inside of itself. That's what meta means. What do you say, like, metadata, for example? It's data about data, right? When you're talking about, for example, I don't know, something else. Meta means itself. So whenever you're talking about something that's meta, it's saying, for example, like, help, I'm stuck in the radio show. You gotta get me out. I'm talking about the radio show on the radio show. You get it? Great. Now we can move on to what a meta narrative is. It's talking about the book inside the book. So when the author, for example, talks about how they were thinking of writing a specific chapter in a book, then they're creating a meta narrative. They are telling a story about the story. They are being descriptive and poking at the walls, aka the fourth wall, which I'm sure everyone knows. By its extreme popularity in Deadpool and other genres such as that, where it specifically looks towards the screen, towards the audience, towards the fourth wall, which originated from like plays and Shakespeare and all that, and says, you, audience, I witness you and I see you, and I know that I'm in a story right now, and that makes me happy, sad, miserable, angry, etc. Whatever the case may be, depending on the story. But now the story shall continue, so I hope you enjoy, and they wink at the screen and they continue. Or whatever other amalgamation that they come up with, that the writer comes up with, right? we have to realize that, again, these are still actors within the scene, but they are interacting with you and making you more immersed. So that's the general sitch of a meta-narrative. A meta-narrative is a story that knows that it's in a story and is able to describe itself as such. This is not a new concept, by the way. There's been probably a lot of fairy tales and stuff like that that probably poked fun at itself. Terry Pratchett also does sort of this stuff, right? He talks about like how similar this world is to the Discworld, and there's a bunch of other authors who'd also do that. But the difference is that a book is stagnant. It is static. It does not change based on how fast or slow you read it. It does not change based on how what page you flip to, unless it's in a choose your own adventure. Even if that's the case, there's only so much you can do with a meta-narrative in a very linear, story-based game, book, or even a movie, right? Even like, for example, when Bandersnatch came out on Netflix, the sort of Black Mirror that I heard about like a couple of years ago that I think got removed, I'm pretty sure. But there were interactive stories within the movie that changed throughout, but it just still stayed pretty stagnant, right? Where am I going with this? Video games allow for more cohesive and more engaging, I would argue, meta-narratives. Not only in their gameplay content with a game such as Undertale, for example, or even a or earlier predecessor, like Off. There's also other games like One Shot that literally are able to interweave your interaction with the game and make you a part of the story rather than just another actor or character that you're impersonating within the game, right? I guess Off would fall into both camps, right? You have the actor that you're controlling, but also you have yourself. Let's move on. I mentioned also, by the way, if you're just tuning in and you came from the Instagram post, I am going to delete my Undertale save halfway through the show. So stick around. It'll happen at any time. I will push the button and it will all be deleted. I'm doing this for you guys, all right? Great. Moving on. Let's talk a bit about Nico and her is Nico boy or girl? I genuinely do not know. I need to look this up. Is Nico a boy or a girl? One shot. It's gender ambiguous. Hooray. We love our gender ambiguous characters. Fantastic. Frisk is also gender ambiguous. They're just referred as child the entire game, or human. Nico is just a cat person. You get it, right? So in this game, it starts off like any other sort of puzzle, interactive, like RPG sort of game. You wake up in an abandoned room, you know, and there's a computer. On this thing, and you have to log into the computer. Okay, pretty standard game, right? When you log into the computer, it's able to identify you based on your username on your computer. When I first played this game back in 2018, that scared the absolute. It's still on the other. Hold on, I need to change the soundboard. Guys. I'm so sorry. There we go, I got it. It scared the shit out of me. It scared the absolute bajibbles out of me, alright? I was scared as hell, but then I realized, wait a minute, it's able to read, the game was able to read my username off of my computer. If you're scared about that concept and you're not willing to play the game, do not worry. Any game that you download can do this. Any game has the ability to read stuff off of your computer, change your wallpaper, stuff like that. And these types of things are actual mechanics that happen later in the game, right? Now here's the real kicker. At the start of the game, Nico is able to talk to you, the player, right? Obviously, again, it's all scripted. It's not like it's not like an AI generated program that's inside the computer. No, it's a linear game. However, it has the ability to incorporate you into the narrative. You are an actor, right? You are a so-called quote-unquote god in this universe because you are able to run the code that this game stands on, which is their world. Nico, however, is from another world. Nico just woke up, theoretically, from a different world that existed in some other universe and got transported into this game. That is the lore. That is the lore of the game. That's the lore of One Shot. And the reason why it's called One Shot is because you only have one shot.
I
recorded that 2 years ago. Isn't that crazy? That's beautiful. Oh my goodness. That's really good. That's really good. It still gets me every time. I'm so glad they didn't remove it. If you don't know the context behind that, that was like 2 years ago on when I was on after class. That was running from 10 to 11, which you can still watch. I believe there's someone after me. I might be changing the times now, but there's someone after me who is doing the show right after. So if you want to still stick around, then be my guest. Have at it. But right now, what I was talking about specifically was that soundboard. All those designs are from me and my friend Daniel, who created the classic. That's good. It's really good. It's just really good. I need to update it, though. I really need to update it. I want to add, like, more notes. I really do. Like, I want to add, like, a nice, an E flat minor 9 chord. Right? Because that'd be like the root 3rd, 5th, 7th, 9th. And then I could add some extra ones in between. It would just go so well, you know? Maybe I'll do that next time. But right now, we need to resume back. What was I talking about again? We were talking about One Shot and your role as the overseeing force that keeps the code in the game running. There's a little bit of a spoiler. Not really much, though, because you never see it in the game. I never seen it anyway. Apparently, if you open the game and immediately close it, the game will basically say that you, when you reload it, it'll say that you killed Nico. I believe, I'm pretty sure it's the dead Nico ending. I'm pretty sure. In Nico, you can kill Nico by exiting the game manually. Apparently. And that's the thing that plays when you do it. Terrifying. Actually terrifying. I love when people put like little things in here. I just want to quickly see what it looks like. So apparently when you turn off the game manually. Okay, no. I'm completely wrong. I'm actually completely wrong. Apparently. Yes, okay. This was in the old version of the game. This was on the itch.io version of the game. And then the newest version, I think it's called the World Machine version. You get what it is when you play the game. I'm looking at you, viewer. You better play the game because it's a pretty damn good game. It has a good story. If you like Undertale, you'll love this game. I'm telling you that much. And if you like, you'll love this game. If we have a little time, I'll talk about some Off lore as well, and talking about how it kind of inspired all of these people, including Toby Fox, which we're going to get to in a sec. But at its core, this game is able to twist the conventions of what you think a game should act like and is able to put it on top of its head. It's still very linear, right? That's the one thing that's different than the definition I gave at the start of the show, is that when you were talking about meta-narratives, it's usually very common that you have like some sort of interaction with the audience and then they're able to respond, right? They're able to put their own input or lack thereof. In this version, it's pretty stagnant, except for the old version where you're able to kill Nico. But that's more of an Easter egg than anything else. Let's talk a bit about the lore, a little more in depth. There's three areas in the game. There's the Barrens, there's the Glen, and then there's the city. I forget what it's called. But basically, the whole idea is that Nico is this little cat that carries around a light bulb that they find in the first area, the house I told you earlier that they wake up in. When they're going out to the Barrens and they are carrying this big old light bulb, they find out it's the previous sun that went out like a couple of days ago, and they need to put it back in to save the world and get the light back for everyone. And then Nico kind of was like, okay, begrudgingly does it, and then finds out about you, the sort of player, the overseer in this world. Now, here's the interesting thing. In the original game, there are puzzles that you have to solve. So for example, there's a safe, right, that you have to unlock in order to get the gas mask that allows you to go into this very toxic area that Nico cannot breathe in. So you, the user, there's no area inside of the game that has the code, right? No, there's no area within the game that has the code. You cannot find the code anywhere in the game except inside the game files. So when you're looking through and you're like, oh, where is it? What am I supposed to do? You're supposed to go into the game files, open it up, go into, if you don't know how to do it, let me give you a quick tip. Go on to your PC, if you're playing the original game, but mind you, if you're playing the original one-shot game, not the newest version, you want to go into browse local files, you want to look, you want to click on the folder that has one-shot in it, and then you can click on, I believe it's code 1 or whatever, and it'll give you the code that you need to unlock the save. Very unique puzzles. Again, I've never seen puzzles done like this before. Would you really call it a puzzle, though? That's the question. If it's a thing that you don't really aren't too comfortable with, again, I understand completely. It's a very esoteric concept. There's not a lot of games that do that, other than, off the top of my head, Doki Doki Literature Club. In my opinion, there's two different flavors of meta-narratives in video games. There's hard-coded ones that require you to literally mess with your files on your computer, or they get messed with the files on your computer. The characters know they're in a video game and can actually program it based on a video game. Or there is the sort of mapped version of a meta-narrative game, a game that takes the concepts, the game mechanics of a video game, and transforms it into something unique. They still know it's a video game, sort of, but they have a different word for it. For example, in Undertale, it's determination instead of, you know, saving and reloading, right? Whenever you die, you respawn at the nearest checkpoint. In that game, it's determination. It's determination that keeps your character alive. Of course, there's some things within the saves and the game files that you can tamper with. But again, it's all inside the game. There's no tampering with actual save files or anything like that. You don't have to go into your data or your browser or your anything like that and discover it. It's interesting, too, because there's a lot of little overlap. For example, you have Stanley Parable, where there's there might be one or two things like that. I think there's a couple of Easter eggs that you can unlock that by only tampering with the files. Off the top of my head, I can't remember that. I swear there's one where it's you can't get this achievement and you have to hack the game in order to get it. Or there's a... what was the other one? Shoot, I had it off the top of my head. Isn't it in the newest in the newest Stanley Parable game, can't you, like, isn't there, like, a thing with a QR code that, like, allows you to scan it or whatever? I don't remember. Doesn't matter. Point is, where was I again? I'm on a lot of tangents today. I'm full of greasy food. I just had like 3 slices of pizza. It was extremely gross. You should have seen me, or you shouldn't have, because that was gross. But what I'm saying to you right now is that Nico's in trouble, and she needs your help. You, I'm talking to you. Play the listener of the show. I'm pointing at you right now. This is not a drill. I'm looking at you very longingly in the eyeballs, and I'm begging you. You have to save Nico. It's the only way. It's the only way to save the game. Anyway, we're going to get into a little bit of spoilers now. So right now, if you're listening right now and you don't want to get spoilers right now, then you better right now turn it off. Or keep listening if you don't care about it. But get the game. Buy the game. It's a very cool game. But anyway, in the game, there is an extra... that's the original game, right? All you do... You go, you explore the world, you realize that it's in, like, a state of peril. Oh no, that's unfortunate. Too bad it's just code. Ones and zeros on your computer. Whatever. Then, you're... The person who is talking to you on the computer, there's little computers that are scattered around and give you clues that allow you to progress in the game further. They are very hellbent. This entity, or whatever it is, it's very hellbent on getting Nico safe, no matter what the cost, right? So, in some instances, there's little pixelated things that occur, a lot of squares that pop up that are breaking the game, that are trying to bend the rules for Nico to ensure that they get out of the game safely, right? So, the whole game is you... kind of toying with the idea of maybe having to sacrifice the world, the code, whatever it is, to save Nico. Crazy concept, I know. It's wild, right? Oh no, it's a very tough decision in a video game. How am I going to cope? And that's exactly what you have to do at the end of the game. You have the choice to save Nico or save the world. I won't go too in-depth on that because you got to play the game yourself, my friend. But basically, that's where the original game ended. However, with a recent, what was it, a 2017 update, I think, they added a new ending called Solstice, which basically added the true ending to the game, where it's not a one-shot anymore. You can restart the game now. You can restart the game and try again. This time, with the caveat that there is another entity called the Author that apparently created the world that is helping you. So, why, right? In this new playthrough, you are meeting new characters. You are going off script, and the entity doesn't like that. So they start throwing wrenches in your plans. They constantly berate you with pixels, even if it puts Nico in danger. Which is weird, because why would you want to do that if Nico is the thing you're trying to save? Who knows? But we do know, which I'm going to explain later. You meet some characters, you go on more adventures, you meet the author's son, so-called son, who describes the actual state of the world to you. The code that is on your computer, that you're playing on right now in the form of a video game, was actually, in this in the lore of One-Shot or whatever, it was the... dying world's last breath. Imagine this world, and we got to a point where we found out, like, from a year from now, that the world was going to end. And some big tech guy was like, hey, what if I, you know, the universe is going to end, everything is going to die, kind of like Iron Lung. So good, by the way. I'm going to want to talk about that later, but that's another thing for another day. I got to still play, Ultra Kill, the newest update for Ultra Kill First, which is related in some way. So I'm gonna describe that next week. But where was I? In this world, let's imagine, again, just to reiterate, that within 1 year, the universe was going to end, right? And you want to put your final mark. So in case that, like, in some weird multiverse crap happens, that whatever echo or ripple that you leave in this world will be somehow floating in free space. Maybe some sort of signal that you send out or some sort of code that you send out, right? And so that's exactly what the author does. In their world, they send out a signal of a video game, a simulation of their world, an encapsulation of every character, every entity in the world, and they put it out there. And the author programmed it so that they would have a happy ending. Even if these characters don't actually exist, they still exist on your computer. The problem with that is that the entity that was, you know, installed on the computer as well, that was running the simulation, kind of went a little haywire when Nico was introduced into it, because they are an actual flesh living being, and the computer that runs, or the sort of entity that is controlling the world, assumes based on like some sort of principle, like there's some sort of principle about robots. I think it's from a book or whatever, but like there's the first principle that you cannot harm a living being. And Nico, to this robot, is a living being. So they are protecting it by at all costs while putting everyone's lives in jeopardy because they don't care about them. Of course, no actual entities, like actual characters die, but the world is rapidly ending way faster than it was in the first game. The floods are way harsher. Everything's in peril. You have to do a lot of things differently this time around. But eventually, you, with the power of friendship, you're able to quell the robot and everything is happy at the end. Yay! But this is a very interesting concept because it actually talks about a philosophical concept called Laplace's demon. Laplace's demon is the concept that if the universe was created at the same exact point with the exact matter at the initial starting position, everything would be the exact same. Everything from your first kiss all the way to the song that you request for your funeral, everything, all your choices you'll ever make will be exactly the same as the first time around. In other words, your fate is predetermined and you don't actually matter. Whatever you do right now does not matter at all in the slightest, because we're going to do it anyway, and it doesn't matter. Whatever thing you think you're going to do, it already happened, right? That's Laplace's demon. So in this universe that we're talking about right now with One Shot, that's exactly it. They're all hard-coded. Even Nico's hard-coded, right? Even the main character who supposedly is from another world, they're all hard-coded. So the whole kind of idea, the whole concept is even when you succeed in your mission of both saving Nico and this world, you still have this sort of gut-wrenching feeling that a world was destroyed. The calamity or whatever occurred to their universe wiped out everyone. So all this is an echo of them. And Nico tells you this. But you get the option to tell Nico that it's going to be okay and that their memory lives on, which I think is just a beautiful ending. Because even if this entire thing is predetermined, their memory still exists. And it also ties into Discworld. Let me explain. The Morris Dance... Let me pull up the exact quote. I want to get this right. Discworld. I love Discworld. It's my favorite thing. Oh, it's my favorite thing. Here we go. In the Ramtop Village, where they dance the real Morris dance, for example, they believe that no one is finally dead until the ripples they cause in the world die away. Until the clock he wound up winds down. Until the wine she made has finished its ferment. Until the crop they planted is harvest. The span of someone's life, they say, is only the core of their actual existence. So even if the world is wiped out tomorrow, even if everything that you know is dead and gone, the ripples that you made, the influences that you created, and the emotional impact you made on other people still exists. Even if it doesn't exist in this moment, it will still exist as a stamp within the universe's history. Even if it does replay over and over again, it will still exist. And that's all you can really have. That's all you can really have, and that's fine. You don't have to have anything else. I think it's perfectly fine to have just a meager, normal existence on this earth with whatever you want to do, art or drawing or whatever else, and just send out good vibes to other people. I think that's exactly it. Anyway, that's an example of a hard-coded puzzle-solving game where you have to tamper with your own machine in order to make sure that Neeko is made safe and the world is restored to normal. That is the general concept of One Shot. And other games like Doki Doki Literature Club and stuff like that. Although they don't really tamper that much with your files until the very end where Monika puts you in the demon cage and then locks you up and says, like, no one else can have you, and you're like, no, and you delete her file. Ha, shows it right. Anyway. The whole idea is kind of centered around that idea. That's the whole premise. That's the whole idea. Anyway, let's talk about Undertale. This is going to be shorter because, you know, we're running out of time. But the central concept of Undertale, on the other hand, is more of a narrative experience. While One Shot has a more, you know, very, very, very light on the character moments and more heavy on, like, it's not heavy on the character moments. There's a few gut-wrenching scenes in there, of course. But, like, at the end of the day, it's more focused on what it can do to surprise you rather than making, like, a very complex story, right? There's no real gameplay to speak of. It's walking and talking to people and puzzles. That's it, right? It's you having to think outside the box, while Undertale is an actual RPG that twists the mechanics. Instead of you fighting creatures, you act on them instead, right? That's the whole idea. That's the whole concept. You don't have to lay a finger on anybody to win the game. And if you do, you get extremely punished for it. What I mean to say is that if you go through the entire game of Undertale without killing or harming any creature, that is the pacifist or the true pacifist route, where you didn't have to lay a single finger on any creature. You went through the game completely without an inkling of hatred in your heart. However, in the genocide route, which I might participate in just to see what it is and cry. Everyone is turning against you, but because you have this thing called determination, it is almost impossible for anyone to really stop you. Which is kind of unfortunate because the whole idea about that is that there's some sort of, like, possession thing or whatever, and I'm like, oh, you know what? Like, I don't have to explain Undertale to you. It's Undertale! Everyone knows Undertale. I went to a convention last year called DashCon 2. If you heard about DashCon 1, don't worry about it. Just don't talk about it. DashCon 2 is where it's at. There were so many people dressed up as Undertale characters, Deltarune characters. Toby Fox is a master genius at writing characters and making them stick. He's extremely good at designing characters and making them stick. What I mean by that, there's a bunch of lovable, genuinely interesting characters like Toriel and Papyrus and Undyne in these games, and fantastic villains too. Great antagonists like Flowey the Flower. Very unassuming, but when you look at his eyes, You just see something really evil in there. It doesn't look good. It's a bit rotten, in my opinion. Anyway, I'm deleting the file. Good riddance. Name the fallen human. His name is Derm. His name is Derm. His name is correct. No, I want to leave. Okay, so they won't actually. Okay, hold on. Wait. Yes. True reset. Yeah, baby. I told you guys I would do it. Oh, look at that. Oh, look at that. I'm back in Undertale, guys. Guys, I'm back in Undertale. I'm going through the door. I'm saying hi to Flowey. Oh, my goodness. It's Flowey. You're new to the underground, aren't you? So that's so interesting. In the normal game, if you don't know, resets don't affect specific characters. One being Flowey the Flower, who is a sort of... plays outside the rules of the game, as it were. They don't affect any of the actual files or anything like that. Toby Fox specifically said it was because he didn't actually know how to program the game properly, so it would actually delete files and stuff like that, so he had to keep it like pretty low to the ground. But either way, the whole concept stems from this flower wanting you to kill people from the very start, wanting to have his revenge. Revenge for, you know, causing him to die to the hands of the humans, yada, yada, yada. You get the idea. Anyway, they're asking me to get some LV. What does LV stand for? Why, love, of course. You're going to share some... Oh, that's so great. Why is that so awesome, Flowey? Come on, let me have some. Friendliness pellets. I want some friendliness pellets. Yeah. I want some... Nah, I actually don't want any. I don't want any friendliness pellets. Hey, buddy, you missed them. Let's try it again, okay? Nah, I'd rather not. I'd rather not have the friendliness pellets. I'm not brain dead, dude. Come on. Bullets. Oh, it's... Wait, they're friendliness pellets. I forgot. That's so funny. You know what's going on here, don't you? You just wanted to see me suffer. That's so funny. Die. So that's pretty much the end. Let me give you a quick rundown of my experience with Undertale. Undertale was a obsession of mine. If anyone knew me back in high school, elementary school, around middle school, in the grade 7 and grade 8. It came out way earlier than that. Grade 6, maybe. Dang. Anyway, I watched every single YouTuber play this game. And the reason why I found out about this game was because of the Game Grumps Steam Train playthrough. It had fantastic YouTubers like Rubber Ross and Barry, I think. Yeah, Barry was there too. Anyway, this is where I found out about the game, and at that point, I was completely hooked. I listened to the Steven Universe Undertale parody, Stronger Than You, every day. I had I had made many presentations where I put little bloopers of Undertale. I had a terrible Flowey impression. It was the works, man. It was everything. I love this game so much, but the problem was it made me cringe, and that's okay. It happens to the best of us. Anyway, I need to save the game. Hold on. The Shadow of the Runes looms above, filling you with determination. Isn't that just so nostalgic? So nostalgic. Anyway. I think that's enough of that for now. I might do another, like, true pacifist run, or I might do a genocide run. We'll see. I haven't figured it out yet, but that'll be ready for me when it comes to it. And if I feel like fighting Sans, then that's besides the point. I think that's a great use of my time. But I guess there's also the sense of Laplace's demon too, because these characters are all hardwired to it, and Sans, if one of the characters in the game, knows that, right? There's a whole spiel that he goes on about how no matter what he does, he can't kill Frisk, which is the main character who is being possessed by Chara or whatever. Point is that the human is on a killing spree and can't die because of determination. So what Sans is trying to do is tire them out. Problem is he doesn't realize he just makes the game more fun because it becomes an extremely challenging bullet hell slash platforming game, which is crazy. The gameplay in this game is a very simplistic bullet hell, sort of like Touhou Project. I don't know how to pronounce that. But like it's sort of like you dodge bullets and that's pretty much it. And you are your little soul is represented as a heart that moves around the screen and you have to dodge bullets basically. But there's other things in the game too. Like there's some extra like things based on what you do, what actions you take, stuff like that. Feel me? All right, great. Your heart, your soul also changes different colors and stuff like that. It's a great time. It's a great time. It's just a great time. It's just a fantastic time. Undertale fit like an extremely weird niche within like the mid 2010s that was transitioning from its like very like random 2012s like culture of like derp and lols and stuff like that into a more like substantially humorist like format. Like it actually had some substance, it had some feel. It was really interesting. And what's even more interesting is that all of these games stem from one game back in 2008. These weren't the first games that came out that toyed with this idea of the player being this sort of actor in the game, right? The thing is, though, is that in Undertale, you don't really experience the world as yourself. You are completely inhibiting you are playing the character of Frisk in the game. You are not an outside character like you are in One Shot, where you are the god that's running the code and restoring the world, right? You are just the character, and that's that. I think there's some maybe interplay with like how Sans says like maybe you won't want to like play the game anymore, stuff like that. And there's a whole bunch of like fan theories about how Sans is Ness from I don't know, man. It's a whole hodgepodge. I can't even recall half of what the insane fandom fueled craze that I was experiencing back then was it was a wild time, man. It was a wild time. I can't describe it. Like it when I played it for the first time last year, 2025, July probably. Like, it felt like I was playing the game 17 times over. Like, it was the 17th playthrough, and I was playing it after, like, a 5-year hiatus, right? You don't get that with any other games, because I was watching so many playthroughs. There's so many playthroughs of this game, and the idea of the pacifist route was something that was so ingrained in my mind as a child that I was like, right now, I'm playing the game again. This is me playing the game again. I'm not, like, this is not the first time I'm here, which is comforting, also a little scary, but it was fun. It was very fun. You should all play this game. It is a masterpiece in storytelling. You should also play One Shot. It's a masterpiece in extending the boundaries of what a game is and what it can affect, what things, like, what medium it can take, what puzzles it can allow you to solve within the game's confines while still being a game, right? That's the whole idea of these games. This is the only medium where you could go into the source code of a game and pull out some secret. It's like if a book had like some secret ink embedded inside of it that allowed you to say like flip to a specific page. But even then, there's like not even, it can't decrypt things unless you're like a cryptologist, right? In a computer system, it's so much easier to just have all of these things interconnected with each other, rather than having a book that would have like random numbers scrawled on specific pages, like Jim Carrey in the number 23. I'm just saying, these are what they're made for. But they were all inspired by one specific game. and a small microculture that expanded out and laid the foundation for all of these games. We're talking about off. Specifically, the whole idea about off is that you are the controller. You are, again, the god of this world that's running on your code on the computer. You don't affect anything. This is sort of the middle ground between Undertale and a one-shot, because you are controlling it, but you don't have any real, like, you don't have to delete files or rearrange things on your actual computer. But the whole idea surrounds yourself on the subversion of expectations of you playing an RPG where you have to grind for XP, you have to continuously get stronger, but you are the sort of angel of death that is slowly bringing the world to an end. You aren't saving it. You are ripping its power. You are ripping its life support from the socket. You are completely wiping the slate from this world because your character, the one that you are controlling, thinks it's impure and is using you to be able to put its ends to its own means. Of course, the whole world beyond that is pretty linear and also pretty like self-contained. It doesn't go out of the bounds. It doesn't look at you and says, you, the viewer, except for one character called the Judge. And that's pretty much it, right? The whole idea beyond that is that you, the subversion was so great that you feel moved by it. You're like, why did I do that? What was causing me? What led me to that path? And it's that whole idea that you were blindly following what the game was telling you. And this extends out to a lot of things, really. You think that the world is supposed to give you some sort of instruction book, that you're supposed to get some sort of pink pill based on what people tell you, what your parents tell you, whatever. What role models influence your life. And you base your entire knowledge off of that, when the world is way, way more complicated. It ain't simple, bud. You can't simplify it into two words. Get like creatine and face mog people, like clavicular or whatever. It doesn't work like that. The world is literally so much more nuanced than that. You can't ascertain anything by just putting it into two or one sentences. They're like these games. You have to take them as they are, but they also are teaching you something very important, that they are allowed to change the rules on you. They won't be the same every time. You aren't gaining experience points to defeat a final boss and save the world. You are leveling up to be able to wipe the slate clean and allow someone with more power to take over. The political ideologies are aside, it's a real thing. It's like a real idea that's able to be only captured through these meta-narratives. And I think a lot of the interesting things about the gaming sphere is that they allow for all these sort of like labors of love. You see in a bunch of fandoms, a bunch of developers come out with a bunch of different spin-offs of these games. Off, for example, had a person named Felix developed the game called Home, which described the game within the cat's perspective, which I'm still playing, by the way. I really want to finish that game. It was so good so far. Then you had all these other spin-offs of in the world of Undertale, when there's a bunch of these other human souls that fell down and died, taken by Asgore. You have the yellow soul and you have the green soul and stuff like that. And they're all different spin-offs. I think the yellow one is the most popular because they got like the revolver and stuff. And there's a bunch of other like alternate universe stuff as well. Like the Sans, but like creepy and stuff. And those ones are like they're a little bit too much for me. I did love, if you have the chance and you want to get a little creepies, go to, just look up Undertale Purgatory, and you'll see, like, some very well-designed shorts, like 30-second animations, of all of these different bosses that you fight, boss monsters that you fight within the game, who become your friends if you take the true pacifist route, that have like these weird, like very, very, very lethargic, but very off-putting, off-kilter attack patterns and stuff. It just vibes so well. It's so eerie. I don't know how to describe it, but definitely check that out. Those are one of the most recent things I've seen from Undertale as of late. But everyone's talking about Deltarune. What's so great about Deltarune anyway? Am I right? What the hell's going on with that? Maybe I should get into it. I don't know. We'll see. I'm going to DashCon 2 or DashCon 3. I don't know how we're naming it, but like besides the point, I will probably be going to that convention. So maybe I'll ask some people. Maybe I'll get the scoop on why they think that Deltarune is so popular nowadays, and why Toby Fox has aspired to be such a fantastic game developer, even though he has terrible coding practices. Yes, I'm a little bit of a computer scientist myself, and the way he coded those if statements, my golly gee, it's just so bad. You should really be able to code better than that, Toby. I mean, let me chew on my cigar real quick. Oh yes, it's a little bit of menthol in there. Oh, it's so good. Anyway, that is the end of the show. I hope you enjoyed. I finally did it, everybody. I talked about meta-narratives. Are you happy? Are you happy? Thank you. All right. Moving on. Next week, we're going to be talking about... What are we going to be talking about? I actually haven't decided yet, but I'll talk about it. I'll send the schedule. I'm probably going to take a week off because I want to get some studying and all that kind of stuff, and I want to prepare for the April term, which we're going to hopefully get all the D&D boys on and maybe do a D&D episode. I want to do a one-shot on the air someday. So that might be in the works, but we'll see. What is going to be next week? We'll see. We have a few options. I was playing a bunch of different Flash games. Games that were inspired by the old, early and mid to early aughts. The early 2000s. Edmund McMillan and his influence on Newgrounds, Binding of Isaac, Super Meat Boy, stuff like that. There's one. There's Fez and specifically, I think it was, what was his name? Phil Fish and his slow descent into madness as he was building the game and how he was able to be tainted by his own ego and creating such a fantastic game, but then also... falling to such low heights after taking things too seriously online. Then we have Kingdom Rush, and we're going to be talking about conglomerates. We're going to be talking about different publishers. For example, Armor Games, who originally published the first Kingdom Rush game. All the other ones afterwards were self-published, I believe. I don't know. Maybe they made their own company. Besides the point, then we might be talking about Baldur's Gate, and then we might be talking about Hi-Fi Rush, because I wanted to play that game for a while. So those are all in the works. I hope you have a fantastic week, and we'll see you next week. I don't know what I'm going to play as a song. Maybe I should play some Undertale music, but I've been really liking this Geese album. The intro, by the way, to this episode was a Geese song, but you didn't hear it because I didn't put on the freaking audio. And I'm freaking pissed, man. I guess I'm just a freaking idiot. You know what? Yeah, screw it. I'm putting on some Undertale. I wonder. Wait, no. Hold on. Let me check if Ultra Kill came out with some new music. Heaven Pierce Her is the actual title of the thing. Nope, they don't. They don't have the new layer online yet, which is fine. It's a huge game. Like the it's becoming so big. Like, it took me 80 minutes to finish one level today. That's crazy. The intro levels take me 2 minutes per each level. It's crazy. It's crazy how big the game gets. It just keeps expanding, which I love. I'll tell you the rest of the history behind that later, because we have a lot of news to go over next week. That might be a while. I don't know. We'll see. Also, there's the upcoming Slay Aspire 2 game that's going to be coming out as well. So I might just swap out a game for that. We'll see how interested I am in all these games. But Let's do some Undertale music. Let's do some Undertale music. Let's do some Undertale music. I love Death by Glamour. Oh, yeah. I'll see you next week. Goodbye, everybody.